I'm Jonathan Green. You're listening to Lost and Found. And this week, we are off to Xinjiang in China. Now here, even the name is contested. You might know this part of the world as the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region, or maybe even East Turkestan, as it was once. The People's Liberation Army entered Xinjiang in 1949. The autonomous region was declared in 1955. Uyghurs, they make up around 45% of Xinjiang's population. And when we hear of Xinjiang here in the West, that the name is most often coupled to stories of conflict and human rights, of re-education camps, of abuses. It's a place of controversy. And yes, of contest. Adjacent to the regions of Mongolia, Russia, Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Tibet, and India, it's a place with deep and rich cultural roots. And the landscape, arid desert air, plunging temperatures at night, bright white light, framed by multiple mountain ranges, it's the kind of place that might inspire poetry.
For many people, Uyghur means, in today's world, that means very far from any human developed societies, because everyone is talking about the human rights or other politics.
Nur Muhammad Majid, poet and president of the East Turkestan Australian Association.
But Uyghurs have lived so closely to the literature, civilizations and other contributions to the arts for many thousands of years. Archaeological findings from the regions or relevant to the Uyghur people have proven that, you know, Uyghur people have used the first the scripts and the arts and other elements of the culture in about 2,500 years ago. Also, from the history, they developed many streams of the literature, oral literature, written literature, arts, and the other elements that sustain among the people's societal structures. Hence, we say literature is one of the components of the Uyghur life, has always been one of the shining glory of the Uyghur society.
How much is it connected to place, to land and country?
Because the East Turkestan and this land, or the homeland of the Uyghurs, historically stretched from the modern Central Asian region, today's East Turkestan, and some part of the today's India and Pakistan region. Hence, on the heart of the Asia, okay, one of the fertile lands, plus that heavily mountains, the forests, the water resources, plus that, you know, the fauna and the other wildlife has exist in this land, has created a unique way for the people to connect their literature to the nature. And hence, Uyghur literature, especially the poetry, as the largest component, is relevant to the natural beauty of the land, waters, mountains, and also the food, the culture, the people's life, and everything that has been admirable in terms of beautiness of the world.
So Xinjiang, the region, it's made up or constituted of multiple sort of people from different backgrounds, cultural backgrounds.
Head chef of Xinjiang Lamian, Weika Zhong and Wen Li, who was translating.
Not just the Han Chinese or the Uyghur Chinese, it's actually made up of about 13 different minorities all across China.
So you say this food,
so the cuisine and the different types of food is influenced by all of these 13 different minorities. And each minority takes the best part of another minority's cuisine and tries to incorporate it within their own. Because there's so many different types of people, you interact with so many different types of people as well. And you go to a friend's house and they might be from a different different background, cultural background, such as yourself, and they'll make a dish that's really delicious, and you'll ask the question, you'll pick out why it's so nice, and you'll try and take that and incorporate into what you make as well.
其实这个饺子呢，其实真正来说呢，它这个在新疆当地少数民族是没有饺子的。
In the different minorities in Xinjiang, they don't typically make dumplings.
没有饺子的。
Yeah.
这个呢，因为我们呢，因为好多是汉族人，就到了新疆本地的汉族呢，把从中国北方的这个传统呢带到了新疆。
So, traditionally, dumplings would come from the northern China. So, what they've actually done is because Xinjiang again is made up of so many different types of people, traditionally the dumplings would be from that part, from would have been brought by the Han Chinese from that region, but then they've integrated different components of the different.cultures into the dumplings themselves.
但是又吸取了当地人这个拌馅儿，因为它是羊肉。
And the key difference is it's lamb versus.
又吸取了它这个拌馅儿里面又放了一些其他的调料，哎，然后呢，这个饺子馅儿里面呢，不但要有肉，而且还要有菜。
So the key difference again, it's lamb. They use a lot of the different spices that are indigenous and native to Xinjiang that aren't present across other parts of China.And they also mix a lot of vegetables into the filling as well. Adding veggies make the dumplings more fragrant compared to just straight lamb or straight meat dumplings.
Different next shop is dumpling.
There's a lot of veggies inside. And being lamb, because lamb has natural fats that are different.
这个饺子可以做成羊肉，可以做成猪肉，可以做成牛肉。
Okay.
任何肉就是 mix 都可以。
You can have it as a pork dumpling or a beef dumpling or a lamb dumpling as well. So
像我们这种 dumpling 呢，因为比较复杂，因为这个菜呢，如果加菜，肉呢很简单，你打水一拌就完了。但如果说做我们这种饺子就麻烦，要把这个菜全部切碎，切成很小的丁丁的。
So the trick is, if you're just using minced meat or if your dumplings are predominantly made of meat, it's a lot easier to make the filling, because the meat is already minced.If you want to make it with a lot of veggies, such as these ones, it's actually a little bit harder process. You have to dice the veggies really fine and similar size to the meat. And then you
have to add water, and then you have to add water.
The other trick is you add salt to the veggies, so it's essentially dry brine. And once the water and the moisture comes out, you have to rinse and squeeze all the water out of the veggies.
就是别人说为什么这个菜里面水其实更好，为什么不放到饺子里面呢？因为这个水放到饺子里面呢，它有点发苦。
Yeah, so that the reason why you want to get rid of all the moisture and the water from the veggies is if you leave the water in and then you cook the dumplings, it tends to have a rather bitter taste in the filling.
有点苦，所以说这个水就挤掉大部分。
So you have to get rid of the majority of the water.
这样子它的馅呢就味道就很好。再加点调料，所以制作起来的拌馅是很复杂的。
Yeah, it's a bit of a trickier process to get rid of the moisture in the veggies.
剩下就是这个面，这个要特别筋道，就像我刚才那个拉面就做这个饺子也可以，对吧？很筋道。
It's a trick.
所以吃这个皮儿呢，它要有弹性。
The trick is to get the dough quite elastic, so it gives a really nice mouthfeel as you're biting into the dough.
You're a poet yourself, and so is your brother. Was poetry a big part of your life growing up? How was it instilled in you as a young man?
It's a good question.
Noor Muhammad Majid.
My brother is a well-written poet in our country, and he was a teacher. At the same time, he was a translator. He was an author of a book, and plus many of the poets published in East Turkestan in Uyghur language.And myself has been influenced by him. In my 15 years of migration history in Australia, I have been disconnected from my culture, from my family, from my country. However, the level of love and the connections has been maintained in my heart. Hence, I express everything in my poems about, you know, how much I love my country, how much I love my people, how much I love my land. And at the same time,And the poets that I'm going to introduce today, you know, the one of the well-known Uyghur poets, Parhat Tursun, who is also an Uyghur man who has immensely contributed to the modern Uyghur poetry. Plus that he was He was very well known for his style. You know, it's not a classical style of poetry, rather it's kind of Western style poetry, which is modernism. And he created a unique way in the Uyghur literature in modern time. He was very well educated man because he finished his university in Beijing in 1991. Mm-hmm. And then after he finishing the university, he was working in Urumqi, in a big city in East Turkestan, as an editor. And at the same time, he continued to engage in literature. So he has published many books, many poems, prosa, and other things, published openly with the endorsement of the Chinese government. However, because of his writings, is crucially relevant to the history, the culture, the arts, the existence of the Uyghur nations. Hence, he was believed to be taken by the Chinese government in 2008. The poem that I'm going to read is well published and is also translated into English by English poet Joshua Freeman, who is a good friend of Ferhat Tursun. The title is called Elegy, Ferhat Tursun. Among the corpses frozen in the exodus over the sea, icy mountains pass, will you recognize me, our brothers? We begged for shelter, took our clothes, pass by there even now, and you will see our naked corpses. When they force me to accept the massacre as love, do you know that I am with you? After 300 years, they awaken and do not know each other. Their own greatness long forgotten. I happily drank down poison, thinking it fine wine. When they search the streets and they cannot find my vanished figure, do you know that I am with you? In the tower built of skulls, you will find my skulls as well. They cut my hat off just to test the sharpness of a sword. When before the sword, our beloved cause and the effect relationship is ruined like a wild lover, do you know that I am with you? When in the market, men with tall fur hats are used for target practice and the man's face draws out in agony as a bullet cleaves his brain and before the eyes that look to find the reason of their death, the executioner fades and disappears, reflected in that bullet-pierced brain's feared thoughts. Will be my form just then, do you know that I am with you? In those times when drinking wine was greater crime than drinking the blood, do you know the taste of the floor ground in the blood turned milk? The wine that Alisher Nawais deliriously dreamed took its flavor from my blood. In that endlessly mystical drunkenness, farthest, deepest chambers, do you know that I am with you? March 2006.
Uyghur culture is really Central Asian culture. It's a Muslim culture.
Rachel Harris, Professor of Ethnomusicology at the University of London.
We have records going back many centuries of the religious life, the cultural life. It's an area that has been fought over for many centuries. Again, there have been many different kingdoms have ruled over that area. That was part of the Chagatai Empire, coming after Genghis Khan, you know. So it has a very complex history, but that has also meant, you know, because of the Silk Road, which passes through it, that it's been subject to all sorts of very rich cultural influences, and those have impacted on the culture today.
What's the relationship between religion and music then in that region?
Again, it's one of those cliches to suggest that the Islamic faith is not friendly towards music, you know. But the Uyghur people, they follow a kind of Islam which is extremely strongly influenced by Sufism, and in that kind of Sufi tradition. You find all sorts of very musical practices going on, even though perhaps people don't refer to them as music as such, you know. So part of my research over the past 10 years has been spending time with groups of women who follow these kind of Sufi practices we call zikr. So they would meet every week and hold these extraordinary kind of ceremonies where they would sing effectively religious hymns and chant these kind of very rhythmic zikr chants, which would bring them into very powerful states of emotion.
So this is a very deep sort of musical practice. It's not the making of songs, but this is the integration of music in many levels, spiritual and I suspect more day-to-day in Uyghur life.
So that is one thing that's been really important to me in my research, to really think about the ways that music has been embedded in daily life. So we've spoken a bit about the religious life. Another thing that I've worked on a lot are these kind of community gatherings called meshrep. And meshrep are also extremely important places for performing music. You know, people sing, they dance, they eat a lot of very amazing food, and they tell jokes. And these meshrep have been incredibly important for really bringing the community together. So that is an example of music being embedded in everyday life.
Chef Wika Zhong and translator Wen Li speaking with Blueprint producer Lisa DeVissi. They're discussing and sampling Xinjiang-style lamb skewers, spiced marinated lamb skewered on long metal spikes, cooked over a super hot grill.
How do I eat it?
Straight off the top.
Straight off, okay.
Whatever you want to do.
All right. Sorry.
You have to watch me now.
Ah, okay. Ooh. Mmm. It's like really, it's so flavorful because it's like really salty, like warm spices.
Puzzled up near with a phenom. It's also because you have to have a good ratio of lean meat to fat because most of the fat renders as you're cooking and the flavors impart the fat, although the spices impart the fat with a lot of flavor.
我们做这个肉呢，虽然说好多人对这个羊肉不太喜欢吃，因为它有膻味儿。但是我们做这个羊肉呢，经过了好几道工序，腌制呀、切完了腌制，然后再用过油啊。我的意思是，它的味道呢，还在放点调料，这样子它的这个味道呢就没有膻味儿。这个羊肉，你试一下。我的意思是，a
lot of people. I guess their preferences in lamb because there's a sort of a raw taste or a gamey taste of lamb that they don't prefer. And that's natural in the meat of lamb. But what they do here is they treat, there's multiple processes of treating the meat. For example, they marinate the meat and then they use high heat in the wok and different blends of spices. And over that cooking process, it gets rid of that gaminess.
所以说，我们以这个肉呢，我们经过第一个是选肉，要选好。然后完了就经过我们刚才那程序。So
the key is.
然后做出来呢，味道很香，它没有其他的。The
key is choosing the right cuts of lamb and sort of having a good supplier in place, and then going through that process of treatment of the lamb. That sort of gives it that real fragrant taste after it comes out of the wok.
So what, how long do you marinate? Like, so with the skewers, how long do you marinate for?
他说你这个烤羊肉串和那个羊肉要腌制多久？这个腌制个一两个小时都可以。最多呢？最多的话，你腌制的话，那你要放到冷藏里面。
So it's either you can do it overnight and then you have to refrigerate the lamb.
基本上其实有两个小时它就够了。
2 hours is typically what you would need to do.
味道就已经进去了。
So the flavor is imparted into the meat over 2 hours.
It's incredible.
So again, another sort of distinction between northern China in southern China. What are you saying? Is that when he was growing up, and because Xinjiang is considered northern China, they typically have noodles as their main source of carbohydrates, and people didn't really eat rice. Whereas in southern China, people would actually eat rice or prefer rice more. So that's a big sort of cultural distinction amongst Chinese people themselves. And it had to be handful noodles. There weren't that many machine made noodles back in the day.
当然在新疆也有，就是像米饭也有，就抓饭嘛。Yeah,
there is. Although in saying that, he's saying
有一个少数民族的饭是抓饭嘛。There
is a rice dish that's quite popular in Xinjiang. It's pilaf, which is
里面有一点黄萝卜，有肉。
It's a dish that he makes as well at this restaurant. So it's a combination of yellow carrots, normal orange carrots, and lamb and rice.
Yeah, so the it's kind of that Middle Eastern.
It's a Turkish dish as well. Yeah,
and
given where Xinjiang is on the border of so many dissecting countries, so many influences in terms of cuisine have come through and been incorporated into the local palate.
It must be a complexity as an ethnomusicologist that, you know, the humanitarian response to the Uyghur position, but also the response to that cultural loss. I mean, they go hand in hand. But there is a culture here being destroyed, as well as that humanitarian crisis for the particular people of the moment.
There are some things which are very clear for me at the moment.
Rachel Harris.
One is that I should do everything I can to speak out about this situation, because there is so much shocking misinformation out there at the moment. And there is really quite a lot of belief in the narrative that's been put out by the Chinese government and its agents. Everything is fine, you know, and all of these stories about what's going on are some kind of a fantasy dreamt up by right-wing Americans, you know. So one thing is a commitment to talking about what's going on. The other thing which is very important for me is that all of the extremely rich musical and religious culture, which I and especially my Uyghur colleagues have documented over the years, it's extremely important that all that material is archived and then made properly available to people in years to come. So one of the great tragedies for me personally was the incarceration of my colleague Rahila Dawood, who was a Uyghur folklorist, a professor in Xinjiang University. She was detained in 2017 and is still, as far as we know, in a camp. So that work of archiving is one very kind of important thing that I feel a need to do. The other thing, which I think is more complicated for an ethnomusicologist, is really the complexity of my attitude to things that we call song and dance in this region. You know, it's been an odd thing that I've studied Uyghur culture for so many years, for over two decades. And yet now when I see public performances on Chinese state media of things called Uyghur music, you know, I really feel very angry, because I regard this as a way of whitewashing what's really going on in the region. When I see these beautiful young women dancing on TV, when I see them singing, even if they are performing, you know, authentic Uyghur traditional music, I just feel very angry, because I know what is going on underneath that surface facade of all the happiness and the smiling, you know. And so I really see these musicians as just tools in a big kind of campaign now to persuade the world that, oh, actually, there's nothing to see here, and look how happy all our ethnic minorities are.
You've been listening to Lost and Found, this time a trip to Xinjiang. You heard from Nur Muhammad Majid, Weka Zhong, Wen Li, and Rachel Harris. Special thanks to Valia Hoy and Bang Xiao. Producers are Lisa DeVisi and Alan Whedon. Technical production by Tim Simons. I'm Jonathan Green.